There is no free lunch when it comes to investing, but what about a podcast that delivers educational content on investing, financial planning, items of interest, and even the odd wacky topic? Welcome to The Free Lunch, hosted by Canvas Wealth. Free Lunch will bring listeners the team's vast knowledge and experience in dealing with uncertainty. Learn more and subscribe today at canvaswealth.ca.
Welcome back to the Free Lunch Podcast. You like that, Karen? Welcome back.
It's amazing.
I don't know if it's amazing. It's amazing that people listen to this podcast. Last week, Karen, what did we talk about? We talked about sell in May and go away. I hope people didn't do that this May.
Right.
Or have not done it because May's been pretty good.
Amazing.
May has been amazing. The opening of this episode was not amazing.
Amazing.
We did have an amazing event last night. We had the folks from PIMCO talking about all things bonds. And so that's what we're gonna carry on with today, right?
Love it.
Yeah. So there's this big misunderstanding of individual bonds versus bond funds, and we're going to get into that. And we're going to talk about yields. We might as well just start there because yields right now, did I say that like that?
You did.
Yeah, weird. Well, they are what they are. Let's look at the five-year Canada bond yield as of mid-May is about 2.77%. Mm-hmm. The 10-year, 3.17%, and long-term bonds are approximately 3.48% from the Bank of Canada.
Yowza.
Yeah, so for all those folks that bought GICs 2 years ago, not bonds, GICs were yielding 5%, and they have their two-year GIC maturing right now.
Yes.
There's no such thing as a 5% GIC to reinvest the money,
right? That's right.
And so then it leads to this question about, well, what do I do with the money? So I assume money that was invested in a GIC was for one of two reasons. Firstly, maybe just for safety, or secondly, because there is a cash flow need a year from the day of purchase.
That's right.
So with these yields that have reduced in the last 2 years, although they have increased slightly in the short term, we need to talk about this for people because, you know, those GIC rates are not what they used to be. And I know I've told this story before, and I know I'm going on, and I'll stop in a minute. I remember one time my dad said to me, well, I'm just going to buy an 8% GIC. And I said, well, if you can find an 8% CDIC insured GIC, please let me know. I'll just sell everything that I own and put it all in there for everybody. And it'll be the easiest year ever. Right?
And did he find one?
Of course not, because that's like finding a unicorn.
Right.
Right? Just doesn't exist. Yeah. So anyways, where are we?
Well, I would say that with recent volatility in the equity markets, it's like someone flipped a switch and everyone's excited again about fixed income. And people are genuinely curious. I don't know if they're curious or they don't really understand. But the question comes up often, should I be buying individual bonds or are bond funds still a good idea? And I get it. Mm-hmm. We've been using bond funds and portfolios for decades. So it's natural that clients are wondering whether that still makes sense in today's environment.
Well, I can tell you in 2008, we used to call up the bond desk every day. And we were on first name basis. We'd say, hey, Chris. Chris worked on the bond desk. Hey, Chris, Colin here. What do you got in inventory today? And Chris would say, well, we've got 10 million TD Cats, D's 23s, 6.25.
It's a different language.
Different language, but, you know, not that hard to understand. Like, he has 10 million in inventory of a TD Capital Trust bond yielding 6.25% that matures in December of 2023. Like, that's just the way they read it. And we would do that every single day. I would call him every morning. What do you got in inventory? What do you got in inventory? But what we've come to understand is that this is not the best way of doing things. So you're right. Since about 2009, I want to say, the CM Group, our former name, now Canvas Wealth, transitioned the way we invest fixed income into bond funds and bond ETFs. And for a long time, bonds were thought of as boring, but now they're finally getting some attention. And people forget how unusual this last decade has been in terms of rates. I mean, we're living in a low interest rate environment. It was ultra low, but now I'll say it's low. Maybe somebody who's buying a house will argue that interest rates are high, but actually if you look at the long-term trend, they're actually a lot lower than they were 20 years ago, right? But let's start by breaking down the I'm just rambling here now. I've just realized. Let's break down the basics. Can you spend some time explaining what a bond fund is for our listeners?
At least you realize when you're rambling.
Oh, yeah. Just snap your fingers or something. Get me out of my trance.
All right. So the basics. A bond fund. It's essentially a pool of individual bonds that's being managed by a professional fund manager. It's like equity funds. It's just a particular asset class that these managers are dealing with, and it happens to be bonds. The main difference, though, in terms of buying a fund versus buying an individual bond, is that when you invest in a bond fund, you're buying shares of the fund itself. Mm-hmm. You're not buying the individual bonds, and the bond can hold anything, including a mix of government bonds, corporate bonds, municipal bonds, and it all just really depends on the objective of that particular fund. But again, it's a basket of bonds as professionally managed by a fund manager.
And you're paying that fund manager a fee for that service, right?
Correct.
So on the other hand, if somebody said, well, I don't want to pay that fund manager a fee, I just want to buy individual bonds. So you could purchase specific bonds issued by the same places, governments, corporates, municipalities, whatever. And each of these bonds has their own unique characteristics. They all have their own maturity dates. They're all issued with coupons. Most of them have credit ratings, not all of them, but most of them. Things that are going to impact the price of those bonds when you purchase them. So let's talk about this main point of this whole podcast. And this is, where are some of the pros and cons of each approach? So let's start by talking about some of the advantages of investing in bond funds specifically.
I'd say that the biggest advantage is diversification. And it doesn't really matter if we're talking about the stock market, the bond market, commodities, real estate, whatever. I mean, if you're going to hear anything from this podcast, it's one of the principles that we always adhere to, diversification. And bond funds just offer this instant diversification across a range of bonds, which helps to reduce risk. Yep. So it includes not only diversification by issuer and type of issuer, but also geographically. So it means that a fund holder may have access to bonds issued by foreign governments and corporations, which may offer better interest rates or yields than Canadian bonds alone. Mm-hmm. And they might be invested in very similar things, but just different regions. So it can be really difficult for an individual to diversify a bond portfolio by buying individual bonds. And I think that's what we're trying to get at here. Because how many individual bonds can you buy if you have, let's say, a $500,000 portfolio and 60% of that money is sitting in bonds?
Yeah, so this would be a 40-60 asset allocation, which is a pretty typical asset allocation for maybe somebody that doesn't have a pension, they're a bit older, they don't want a lot of risk in their portfolio. And so if they've got 60% in bonds on $500,000, I guess that's $300,000. And if you are buying, you know, $10,000 bonds, well, I guess that's 30, right?
It's pretty limited.
Pretty limited. You know, some people would say, well, you know, yeah, but I'm buying 30, so I'm diversified. Well, the bond market, and I don't think we have this in our show notes today, the bond market is almost twice the size of the global stock market. Mm-hmm. So there's, I don't remember the number, but it's trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars in bonds. And so, and even to purchase a $10,000 bond, it can be difficult, right? Mm-hmm. And so let's say you said, well, but you got to do $30,000 purchases for each of those bonds. Well, now you're limited to 10 bonds.
Right.
10 bonds. How do you choose between the thousands of bonds out there and narrow it down to 10? And how does that give you diversification?
That's right. And I think that's the number one thing that we're trying to get across here is diversification. But the second thing, and you alluded to this, professional management. And that simply means that an experienced fund manager who's making decisions on which bonds to buy and sell. And that can be a relief for the types of investors who aren't really well-versed in the bond market because, as you said, the bond market is huge and it's really unknown. It's a bit of a nebulous concept to a lot of people. And I'll give you an example. So you turn on the news and it talks about the Dow doing this or the S&P doing that. Dollar is at this and oil is at that. But it doesn't usually say what's happening in the bond market.
Yeah, it's that thing that people don't talk about. We talk about it.
We do.
Yeah. And the other point of that, getting back to that diversification point, is when you look at individual bond portfolios, if you are buying individual bond portfolios with $300,000, you're just going to have a concentrated portfolio, yeah. Right? So, yeah, you could pick a couple Canadian banks. You could pick the Government of Canada, the Province of Alberta, maybe a Greater Toronto Airport Authority bond or a Ford Credit Canada or something like that. But, you know, you're going to be focused on just a couple of key sectors. And that's a problem, right? That's not being diversified. And so you might end up with a portfolio of, I don't know, 10 financial company bonds. It could end up being a real serious issue. And you know, everybody knows how we feel about diversification.
Well, they certainly will after this podcast.
Yeah. And go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say the question that I would ask anyone who owns 10 bonds in a ladder, would you feel comfortable owning just 10 stocks? Because it's kind of the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing I always like to propose is, look, okay, you've got a portfolio of, let's say, $500,000. If you had a portfolio of $1 billion, would you be comfortable just having $100 million in each of 10 bonds? I don't know why I used two different.
Well, it doesn't matter. I get the point. The point is, like, yeah, okay, so you have $100 million. Are you seriously going to buy 10 bonds?
Right.
That's crazy, right? I mean, look at the companies that have failed over the years, companies that, you know, people thought were good, stable companies. And then we go through some crazy market cycles and they're offside and they're not here.
Right.
Right. It's just large numbers. But the thing, of course, is that bond funds are also highly liquid.
Right.
Different than owning individual bonds.
Absolutely.
Individual bonds are liquid, but harder to sell. But you can buy and sell the shares or the units of a bond fund any day. There's right. No problem there. And I want to call out one thing about liquidity in this episode is how dumb it is to buy GICs. Did I just say that out loud?
You did.
I'm glad I did. I've been holding on to that one for a long time because we like to buy things that have liquidity.
Mm-hmm.
And when you purchase a GIC, you do not have any liquidity, right? You are stuck in that GIC for the term of it, no matter what happens in most cases. And so at least when you're buying a bond fund, you can sell that position anytime.
Easy in, easy out.
Yeah. And same for bond ETFs, but another discussion another day, but same type of thing, really. Like a bond ETF and a bond mutual fund are essentially the same things, you know, so they just give accessibility to a broad range of investors, you know, because like, let's say you have a $50,000 RSP. How would you buy 10 bonds? You can't.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, and even think about the minimum amount that it takes to purchase a bond. Some bonds, mm-hmm. as we talked about earlier, you need to have $25,000 just for one purchase. And yeah. depending on the bond itself, it could go up from there. But let's say you only have $5,000. Well, super easy to get into an ETF
yeah.
or a bond fund.
Yep. Where are we? Oh, I was going to say, talking about liquidity, diversification, I was in Saskatoon recently mm-hmm. hanging out with some family members. I won't call out this person specifically, but he might be my brother.
Which one?
I'm not going to call that out specifically, but you know, he was talking about how he had bought, this is a different topic, but NVIDIA shares.
Mm-hmm.
And he was up, I didn't remember the number, let's say 40% or something, mm-hmm. but it was like on $1,000.
Right.
So, I mean, that's great. I'm happy for him that position has gone up from when he purchased it. Just like I'd be happy for anybody that purchased a bond or bond fund and it went up, but you know, it's $1,000.
Right.
It's not gonna, you know, solve your retirement problem. Let's put it that way, right?
Good point.
Okay. Another advantage of bond funds versus individual bonds. That's a mouthful. Probably not a lot of what people think about is something called cash drag.
Right.
So it's basically the underperformance of a portfolio relative to the performance of the underlying assets. So just to clarify this a little bit. So we need to think about how a bond works. So typically when you buy a bond, you buy a certain principal amount, let's say $10,000, and let's say it has a 5% coupon. So it pays you 5% interest until it matures, and then you get your $10,000 back. And along the way, you received $500 payments, right?
It's a lot of math.
It's a lot of math, but actually it gets worse because most bonds pay semi-annually. So right. It's not, you don't get $500 once, you get $250 twice, right? So every 6 months you get $250. But So let's say you want to reinvest the money that you're receiving from those coupon payments. As you pointed out earlier, well, if you're buying individual bonds, you probably can't buy a new bond position with $250.
Right.
So you're going to have to put more money into it, or you're going to have to aggregate it with other cash or something. Whereas when you're in a bond fund, you can have that $250 reinvesting regularly, right?
Exactly. Basically, what happens is when you've got these individual bonds, it takes a lot of time and management to ensure that the payments don't just sit in cash. Because, hey, if you can show me any type of cash-like investment that pays the same yield as bonds or stocks, talk to me, because it doesn't really exist. Even high-interest savings accounts are not paying very much these days. And if you're trying to manage all of these individually, they're could be a lot of cash drag, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which certainly can affect the performance of your overall portfolio. So as you said, bond funds, because of their size, they're very efficient at reinvesting these cash flows quickly into additional bonds. And they do that as soon as one of these cash flows shows up, which actually helps offset certain things like inflation risk and interest rate risk and maybe even reinvestment rate risk. It's just a natural hedge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Now, okay, we're going to have listeners out there that say, yeah, but if I buy an individual bond, I know when it matures and I'm going to get my money back. Mm-hmm. And when I put money into a bond fund, it doesn't really mature because it just keeps buying new bonds. Mm-hmm. That is true, right? However, the bonds that the bond fund are buying all have maturities.
That's right.
You know, it's, and so yes, as they mature, they get reinvested into new bonds that are in the market. So there's actually a bit of a interest rate hedge naturally built into a bond fund that doesn't appear in individual bond portfolios, right?
I would agree.
Yeah. So something that bond investors will want to look at is the duration of the bond portfolio. Duration is just like the time frame. So if you look at a bond portfolio and it has a duration of 3, it's like buying a 3-year bond, mm-hmm. right? Or 7, it's like buying a 7-year bond. Okay. Sorry, I took us off on another tangent, but
that's okay.
But another advantage of bond funds, this one might, I don't know if this will go over well, but are fees. You know, because there's a lot of people out there that say, well, you know, if I buy an individual bond, I don't necessarily pay an ongoing fee. Whereas if I buy a bond fund, I've got the management expense ratio that's charged every year.
Right.
Right. But we also know the bond market is not like the stock market. It's not an auction market. So when you go with the stock market, everybody meets on a single exchange or exchanges, mm-hmm. and you can see the bid and ask, and you can see the market participants. It's pretty transparent, right? With the bond market, all those purchases are done between institutional bond desks that are not in a central exchange, and then they make their way down to retail bond desks, mm-hmm. right? And then they're sold to retail clients. So it's a bit of a layering effect. Well, not a bit of a layering effect.
It is.
It's a huge layering effect. Mm-hmm. So if you think about it, when a bond is issued for, let's say, $100, like all bonds are issued, called par, right? And it has a coupon on it of 3%, so an interest payment of 3%, and it's sold to the first institutional desk that's part of that new issue deal, right? That institutional desk then turns around and resells that bond to another institutional desk at $101, making the yield 2.8%, right? And then it goes to maybe another institutional desk or to a retail bond desk at $102, making the yield 2.65%. So by the time it gets to the retail client, there's already a fee being charged of $2.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think a lot of people take that into consideration. And that's what they call the bid-ask spread. If you're buying stock on the stock exchange, as you talked about, then it's a liquid stock, like maybe one of your big bank stocks or a large Canadian company or something. The bid-ask spread might be 1 cent, but when you're buying a bond from the bond desk, the bid-ask spread can be quite substantial.
Yeah, a dollar or two mm-hmm. on $100
adds
up. Pretty big expense. So the other thing that can work against you is what? What were we going to talk about? Well, let's just talk about, I'm not sure where I was going with this. Oh, I know where we're going. Okay, so timing. So if you purchased a bond from the bond desk, I've seen this happen. We've purchased a bond from the bond desk, let's say at 9 o'clock in the morning.
Yep.
Turned around at 10 o'clock and said, and we purchased it for $101.
Yep.
Right? We paid that premium to purchase that bond for this client. The client turned around and said, you know what? I actually don't want that bond anymore. Can you sell it back to the bond desk? So an hour later, we call the bond desk, say, you know what? I got to sell you back those RBC cats or whatever. And they said, no problem. We'll give you $99 per bond.
Isn't that crazy?
$2 spread.
Yeah.
In an hour.
Yep.
On a bank issued, highly rated bond.
Where nothing else has changed.
Nothing's changed. There's been no economic movement in that hour. There's been no new tariffs announced in that hour. There's been no interest rate adjustments in that hour. So this is a big problem.
Right.
Yeah. So I would say that that works against you.
Well, and to this point, and some people aren't going to like me saying this out loud, but the way that it's been described to me, and these are not my words, when you buy bonds from a retail bond desk, you're buying bonds that are either too high of a price or too low of quality. And that if you actually went up the ladder to the institutional desks, as we talked about, you'd be able to get better prices and better quality.
So that saying about they're either priced too high or they're bonds that nobody wants, that was a friend of mine that told me that saying.
Oh, yeah?
And he runs a bond desk. I won't say for who, doesn't matter, but it's a big bank. You know, so, you know, that's right from the horse's mouth, okay. Right? So there's obviously advantages to owning bond funds, and we just discussed some of them here, but I want to talk a little bit more about why it might make sense to own individual bonds too, because we want to be fully transparent.
Absolutely. Right? Yeah. Give and take.
Yeah. So there might be some reasons why you want to own an individual bond. And one of the arguments that comes up against bond funds is that whole fixed maturity issue.
Right.
So when you own a bond fund, that bond fund is constantly having maturities in it and constantly being reinvested. But if somebody did have a very specific cash flow requirement, you know, you could purchase a ladder of individual bonds and just guarantee that cash flow. So there's nothing wrong with that. It's just, I don't think it's as great as most people think it is.
Right. I don't think it's as prevalent as most people think it is. But let's say you do need cash for a large purchase on a single date in the future, 2 or 3 years down the road. Mm-hmm. Or another example, you're planning for regular expenses such as tuition, which come up once a year maybe. And then there might be a reason for holding some individual bonds with specific maturity dates. And that's just what we call cash flow matching. And I would argue that it's all time horizon related. Mm-hmm. It's just the same as if someone came in and said, hey, I've got this $500,000 and I'd like to invest it. Well, one of the first questions is, what's your time horizon?
Yeah.
Well, if you want to buy a house in 6 months, that's not going to work. We have to find something with much less risk, more liquidity, right? Mm-hmm. And so you're going to be pretty limited on what you can invest in versus the $500,000 that you have no need for and it's going into your retirement funds 20 years from now. Yeah. And all of a sudden, you've got lots of options.
Yeah, yeah. I want to talk a little bit about strip bonds and principal protected note issuers.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
Because okay. There's also a number of structured notes out there that are issued and they're classified as fixed income or bond equivalents. I don't think that they're always necessarily that they should have that classification. But years ago, I remember when they came out as principal protected notes and it was all the rage. Well, firstly, it was the rage because the commission was like super high, you know, so there's that.
A rage for one side of the equation.
Yeah, yeah. So the advisor makes some money, the bank makes some money, and 2 out of 3 ain't bad. It's a bad saying, but that's how the world works sometimes, yeah. Right? So
not our world.
No, not the way we manage money, but that is out there. So if somebody wanted to, let's say they had that cash flow requirement in 4 years. I said, you know what? I just want to make sure I've got that $100,000 in 4 years because I'm going to buy X, right? Well, you could go and buy a strip bond mm-hmm. for, let's say, $80,000.
Right.
So $80 per bond, maturing at $100 per bond. It's already there. You already know what's going to mature. You're going to get the $100,000 in 4 years. But then you could take the difference of what you didn't pay for the strip bond, so that's $20,000, and you could put it into something else.
Yes.
Right? So maybe like the stock market, right? And in that scenario, you're going to sort of guarantee the amount that you wanted in 4 years, but also give yourself the opportunity for growth because that happens.
Yeah, we've done that for some clients. Absolutely.
Yep, for sure. For sure.
So, you know, while we're talking about the individual bonds, they do create this illusion of price stability, but they're basically all subject to the same factors that affect bond prices in general, whether they're sitting in an individual portfolio or in a fund. And when you think about it, a bond fund is really just a diversified portfolio of individual bonds. So when people say, well, I'm going to have a bond ladder and I'm going to have those 10 bonds that we talked about, each maturing each year for the next 10 years. Well, if you multiply that by 10 or even 100, and that's what a bond fund is. So while they've got a bunch of individual bonds that are each going to mature at a particular time in the future, the price today of the entire portfolio is going to fluctuate exactly the same as if it was in a bond fund.
Well, and I would say go with the professionals, you know, because you're going to run into situations where you're going to have rising or falling interest rates because of monetary policy, fiscal policy, something I became aware of the other day, political policy is the new one that people are talking about, right? And so when you're, when you're in those individual bond ladders, you're just subject to being invested over that time.
Yeah.
But if you're in a bond fund or bond pool, those managers are working to adjust the duration based off of the interest rate outlook, and that can really work in your favor, right?
Absolutely.
They're also able to do things like due diligence, right? I remember years ago, this is pre-global financial crisis, I had a fella who would come in and he'd say to me, you know, I was reading through the Calgary Herald on the weekend and I was looking at this convertible debenture and I've done my due diligence on it and I think I want to buy it. And it always seems so silly to me because it's like, okay, you were reading that in the Calgary Herald or the Toronto Globe Mail or whatever. So
that's the due diligence?
Yeah, like whatever information is available about that particular security is already priced in, right? So the fact that you did your due diligence by what? I don't even know what that would entail in that scenario, right? You know, you want to be paying somebody to be verifying the creditworthiness of each issuer, staying informed with things like financial health issues or potential issues with the companies. I mean, that's why you pay those people, right?
Money well spent.
Yeah.
So we are almost at time here. So if we were to sum it all up and ask that big question, which approach is better, individual bonds or bond funds? I would say this, there is no one size that fits all. It really depends on what we talked about, your goals, risk tolerance, how much involvement you want to have in that. Selection for those investors who want things like diversification, professional management, liquidity, somebody who watches things like duration, like you talked about. That's my stance. I'm going to stick with it. And the cost of that MER, it's outweighed by the professional expertise that's going into managing the pool of funds for you.
And those MER costs have been trending down over the years.
They're so low.
Yeah, it's not as prohibitive as it once was. So yeah, I agree with you 100%. You know, you want to have, you want to have liquidity. Mm-hmm. If you don't have liquidity, you've got nothing.
Right.
Right. So
that's risk.
That's risk. That's done.
Done.
All right. Anything else?
No. Till next week.
All right.
Thank you for listening to the Free Lunch Podcast hosted by Canvas Wealth. To subscribe to this podcast to get more realistic insights on investing or to connect with one of our talented partners, please head on over to canvaswealth.ca. We'll see you next time on the Free Lunch Podcast.
Financial planning services are offered through Canvas Wealth. Portfolio management services are provided by Q Wealth Partners, a registered portfolio manager, investment fund manager, and exempt market dealer. Canvas Wealth is an owner and partner in the Q Wealth Partnership. The information discussed in this show, including any opinion, is based on various sources believed to be reliable, but its accuracy cannot be guaranteed and is subject to change. The opinions expressed in this show are opinions of the individuals and do not represent the opinion of Q Wealth as a firm.